his thankfulness and continued recovery, he continues to be of service at many levels. More currently, as intergroup vice chair, he was Area 1 co-chair, delegate for the last 2 years, chair of World Service Convention last year, chair for the retreat of last year, and service at Munich. Rick finds that being of service keeps him out of himself and out of the crew. His desire is to share this program with others.
Hello. Very good. This is your higher power speaking.
Hi, I'm Lila there. This is my wife, Kat. We're hosting the panel here and stuff, and I'm here to introduce Lola and Nacha, our sisters. Nacha, she's been absent in the program for approximately a little over 3 years. She's a married, has kids, I don't know how many. Oh, married, it says, I thought it said married and children. No kids, okay. You are a nurse, full-time? Okay, full-time nurse. She sponsors on all levels, such food, inventory, steps, and maintenance. And that's what I have on her. For Lola, she's my coffee pal. I say that because in the mornings we were stopping at the same place to get coffee in the morning for quite a while. But Lola, she is has 4 years in recovery in the program. She right now resides in Whittier, right? Whittier, California. And she is also a full sponsor, meaning it's food, inventory, step, and maintenance. So we'll go ahead and let the panel get started. If you guys do have any questions after they get done, you can give questions. And if you do need to, we want to repeat this, if you do need to give a question, you need to put your name on the list that's here at the, if they speak into the microphone. But if you, you know, I just heard anybody say this question, you got to put a name down. So, all right, so here we go, and I guess I give it to April.
Well, my name is Rick, and we're kidding about if we want to give an hour and a half time for questions, you know? So, that's it. Anyway, let's see. Well, I'm glad to be here, first of all, at the convention. I'm glad to be service and taking on a lot of commitments. How is, you know, it is a family thing. It is really how this has become. And I have a surrogate mom here. Truly, I do, and some brothers and sisters, and my real family of origin, which is much more of a train wreck, you know. Dad, an alcoholic, and mom was a prescription pill mixer, which are different doctors she would go to. My family of origin was anything like family affair. You remember that show, Family Affair? And it had Lil Buffy in it, and Johnny, and then who was Sebastian Cabot, and who was the other guy? Yeah. Well, it just turns out that April and I actually know Johnny Whitaker, who was a little boy in that. He still looks exactly the same. And if I would have put some forethought into this, I said, come on along. And if you saw him, you'd go, that's the same guy. He's just older and looks a little bigger. But outside of that, he's the same. You know? But my house is anything but that. And a lot of disunity, a lot of chaos, a lot of unpredictability. Dad, alcoholic, so I didn't really know what to expect from him most of the time. And my mom, like I said, just wasn't well emotionally. And in my family, some mental illness and a lot of addictions, but all of them never spoke of. So a lot of family secrets. And the result was, I use the example of if you come up to a corner and you see maybe you see part of a taillight in the street and you see some skid marks and some glass, you didn't have to see the accident to know what happened. You see the aftermath of that. So that's my family of origin. We couldn't talk directly about these things. But the after effect was a brother that committed suicide, another one that was... when he was 18, went into mental hospital the first time and never got out of that, lived in that system his whole life, and then my older brother, an alcoholic. So I'm the functional one of the bunch. You know, that's a very scary thought, and I've had my own issues to deal with, of course, which is why I'm here. And so that was anything but a family-like affair, and yet at the same time, that's, you know, what I was given. And the good news has been that I was able to make some choices as to how I wanted to do that different. And so I came into this program very much an isolator, very much in fear, and I only came because I had to. I had some physical issues where I was really dying. The doctor told me, you're going to die, and you're going to go get gastric bypass surgery, and you might die from that too. Show me that, just straight up, you know. And I'd known many people that did that, and I don't know anybody that didn't get complications from it, and I actually had known some that died. So I was able to find how within a week or so of that event, went back to my doctor and said, hold it, you know, I found this. And that started me in this program those 5 years ago, and a little over 5 years ago. And the first thing I noticed when I walked into my first meeting was an acceptance and even being cared for. I didn't know what to do with that at the time because I wasn't used to it and I didn't have anywhere to really file that and experience too much, except I had been married for 17 years and divorced, and I raised my two kids. And even in that, you know, relationship, there was a lot of turbulence at times just because I would get crazy because I was an undiagnosed compulsive eater, weighing 360 some odd pounds, thinking I was invisible, you know, and an isolator. And so both my kids learned how to eat from me, and a typical Saturday morning would be get up, there's nothing to eat. And so I get hypoglycemic also, but I didn't know that at the time either, so my blood sugar would drop way low, and I'd start running around like a crazy person, yelling and screaming, just being an idiot, basically. Not meaning to, but that was the bottom line. And my kids are screaming, and everybody's running around screaming, you know, there's no food, because, you know, I was nuts. And I just didn't buy the food ahead of time. And so we're running around, and we run up to some place where we can get the quickest breakfast we can, which is the most unhealthy thing you could possibly think of, and which would just goof with my blood sugar more. And I just didn't have any idea why I was reacting the way I was, but that's how I lived most of my life, and that stress and anxiety that was talked about there in the introduction, and thank you for that, by the way, was certainly a big part of my life, and I didn't realize that I was creating most of that myself, and I didn't have to. And until I got in an environment that was more safe, and at that point I would talk about, you know, CIHOW as a whole. And I came in very skeptical because I still have trouble trusting, but I'm better than I used to be. And I'm an equal opportunity distruster, both with men and women. I don't discriminate, you know. And it's really been, you know, I've learned in program that there are safe people here, and there's some unsafe people here. You know, as you go through life, you figure that out. And so that was my experience, you know, family-wise coming through. What happened when I came into program with my family, that is with my kids, both of them were about 90 pounds overweight, and I was about 160 some odd pounds overweight. And when I came in, like kids do, they don't do what you say. They do what you do. So kids imitate behavior really well. And however, if I told them to do this, they never would have done it. I didn't even think they would, but they started eating abstinently like I did. And within, during the time that I lost about 110 pounds or so, they both lost 90 each. And so that made it nice for me. And I know not everybody's story here is the same, because I didn't have to have non-abstinent food in the house. And they were eating abstinently as well. So I remember just everything in the cupboard. I cleared out anything I could that was junk and got it out of there, and had a lot of cooperation between myself and anybody else in the house, as far as, you know, they didn't even bring non-abstinent food in the house. And when at that point in time, they were younger, and I was paying for all the food anyway, so they had to eat what I had, you know. And so that was really, really helpful for me. But I learned that as I worked through the steps, as I worked the program, the first part of that, with getting the food part, was good. That was an initial reaction to it. But emotionally, I got so much more healthy that my family became more stabilized. And we could now sit down and talk, and we could have, you know, reasonable conversations. My daughter still shows, you know, she's a compulsive eater, no question about it. She's struggling with that right now, and she'll probably come back into program. My son, he's very addictive with other things, and although he seems to have straightened that out the minute, but a lot of anxiety dealing with that too at the time. So I've just had to learn how to float through that. And I started out a few minutes ago saying this, and I'll kind of point back to that. That anxiety and the stress I was creating myself, and I did not know it. And we were in a workshop earlier today where the presenter said, you know, when you feel like going to the food, you can start working backwards. And I had done this in my head without realizing it. You can say, you know, here's what I want to do, and then start working backwards till you figure out, why do you want to do it? What's the issue going on, and what's really happening, and where's it going to really go if you do that? You know, that's the end result. And I realized in my own head, what I was doing is I was so used to stress and anxiety from my family of origin that I would recreate that in my life over and over and over. And I had all sorts of ways of doing that. Getting a ticket and not paying for it, and waiting for it to go to warrant. So I'm looking in the rearview mirror, wondering if I'm going to get pulled over by the cops, and doing sorts of what appear to be irresponsible things, and they are, but that wasn't the motive. And I used to wonder, why am I doing this? You know, and I was just recreating that same
scenario over and over and over in my life. And I finally realized I could stop doing that, but that took some time to get to. So once I figured out that I could stop doing that behavior, then that anxiety and that stress that I was recreating, and since I was not recreating it and I wasn't using food to mask it, all of that stuff was right in my face. So it's been interesting for me to, and very freeing for me to work through that. And from a family point of view, again, with my kids, we've kind of become a little too enmeshed somewhere along the road there. And so recently, as we talked about, April and I were married a month ago, and during the last year and a half, you know, usually the kids leave home. Well, this time I left home. You know, that's what happened. And because my kids were still living with me, and they're older. Now they're 20 and 24. And so when we met, they were 18 and 22. And we went through this process of kind of putting a little more distance. And I thought it was really hard on them. It was really hard on them to let go. And you know what? It turned out it was hard on me. I was really the one it was hard on. And I spent a lot of time in tears, you know, trying to understand that and let that go. And so now we can talk a little better. And that kind of brings me up to the minute, which is April and I being married, and as a couple in how... we've heard all sorts of interesting things, and if you want to jump in, if I'm leaving anything out, feel free. All sorts of interesting things from a lot of people, and we had one couple say, "Don't touch each other's food. Don't, you know, you cook your food and you cook your food and you know, don't touch it." And they were very serious. And I said, "Is that the way you guys do it?" And they said, "We don't touch each other's food. She doesn't touch mine. Nobody cooks for anybody." And I guess that's their way of keeping boundaries, clear boundaries, you know, so that things don't get mixed up. So that's one of the things, I mean, they have a legitimate point. I just don't want to be that drastic about it, but the point is, while you're working as a couple or in a family, you can't let the other person's program influence yours to the point where you're gonna slip or do something, you know, that you don't want to be doing or whatever that is. And so what we found is we're a great support for each other. Except, and I'm going to be very honest here, except once in a while, and I'm going to be really honest, I'm going to be very honest because I'm... Hello? I'm not sure. We're seeing things from the back. I hope everybody else is too. Being very honest, a few nights ago, we actually had one of these situations come up sometimes with couples, and it was pretty stressful on both of us, and it wasn't a yelling, screaming match, and we've learned how to talk these things through, and yet at the same time, I realized, you know, it was one of those times to just really be clear on what I'm doing, and I'll let you speak on it from your point, but you know what I'm doing, be clear on what my program's like, and you know, set boundaries, And there is very healthy ways you can do this in a relationship and be a couple. And even if one is abstinent and the other isn't, or you're from two different, you know, programs or whatever, which is pretty common here. So it's been really a help. It's been very, very much a help, and I've heard some other couples say it's a hindrance sometimes. But for us, somebody always kind of has my back in a way. And I don't try to run April's program, and she does not try to run mine. And at the same time, you know, we can be a help to each other, and we usually are. And yet there's that one little area where, you know, we walk a fine line sometimes. If things get frustrating, you know, how do you kind of maneuver around that and yet keep your boundaries and keep your abstinence? And I think I'm going to stop right there. And let you say a few words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
If you'd like.
If I'd like. Thank you for your honesty.
We didn't.
I know you should have. Anyway.
Uh-oh, this is going to be another one of those.
I got the mic now, boy. You know, I was thinking family affair, you know, so I'm thinking about my family. And, you know, I
Rick has moved into my place. And so now we've got all this kind of stuff to go through. And so just, what, yesterday going through boxes, and I found a picture of my mom. And so I was reflecting on that, going, okay, family affair. That was, I'm looking at my mom. She's standing up. And you know what? Her body, identical. I'm looking at, she's probably my age right now in this picture. I have the same exact body, you know, the same weight. I was at 220, and at this same time, she was at 220, short waist, the stomach, you know, just the whole, the back fat, you know, everything. It's like family affair. Yep, that's it. You know, the same thing. But, you know, I was thinking about that, the copying, too, that, you know, I wish she was around right now, because I could, oh, we'd have so much to talk about, you know, things that my mom would do that I would join in on, you know, the eating things, and I'm not going to mention all the food stuff, but it was like, oh, that was crazy. I was telling Rick yesterday one of the dipping things we used to do, and I'm like, oh, yeah, copy, you know, and what you're around, what you do, and I remember in elementary school, my mom would not go to open houses. She was too embarrassed. She didn't want to go with me. My dad would always go. He was not a compulsive eater. And when I was in seventh grade, I weighed 150 pounds, and I was 5 foot. I totally remember that number. And then she's like, oh, hurry up, get her, you know, get this weight off her, because she didn't want me to go through what she went through. On diet pills, and when I was 12 years old, I got on diet pills, Speedball, yeah. And you know what? I lost 50 pounds in like 2 weeks, you know? Not really, but you know what it felt? And I have like, I think, two pictures of it, because, boy, that was like how long it lasted for, you know, when you lose that weight like that. It's like, oh, dang it, you know, that's like my whole entire life, you know, for seventh grade, and that was it. But that was what started it all, you know? And my mom battled, and I have to say this one thing, too. In regards to, you know, when I think about the real deep disease of this whole thing, my mom ended up having to have her leg amputated. And you know what? It wasn't from diabetes. She ended up getting cancer in her knee, of all things. And it was some kind of sarcoma, something or other, a long, long name. But you know what? Here she is. She had it 5 years. She had chemo, radiation, and all that. Here she is laying in the bed. You know what she says to me? She goes, I can't even believe this. I can't even die thin. You know, for whatever reason, she did not get all skinny from the chemo and all that stuff. She says, I couldn't even die thin. And that's sick. I mean, that's this whole, right, even at the very end, you know. But family affair, you know. I'm thankful. Actually, my three kids, my son right now is battling with his little, you know, his compulsive overeating that he just acquired a year ago because he's on medication. You know, Rick and I, one of the neat things when we met was at a meeting, and afterwards somebody said, yeah, well, let's go get Starbucks. Okay, let's go. So he was standing there, I was there, and we all went, and two girls invited us. And you know what? We've never seen them again, these two women that left Starbucks. They left us alone in this Starbucks drinking coffee. And he lived way over in Canyon Country, which is like wherever, Santa Clarita. And I'm like in Brea. We closed down Starbucks, and he drove home. But you know what? That was a total, we call it a God thing, because we had so much, I'm so thankful. I wanted to share this to give hope for relationships. You know, I believe we are a family in here. You know, we have our blood family, and we have this family. And, you know, I have to say that for my life, I believe that there is so much blood closeness in this program than we'll ever find for most families, you know, and I'm thankful for that, and I hope you are too, and just really cherish that, you know. But I want to say God was involved in that too, and I don't mean to get all into that, but I just wanted to share this because we had so much in common sharing. He had a horrible, horrible growing up. I had like the Leave It to Beaver kind of, you know, nobody's totally, but my marriage, I was married 20 years, very abusive, and we had mental illness. My son has mental illness. That's the meds and the weight gain and blah, blah, blah. But he put us all together. And you know what? Now being a married couple, and we're newlyweds. We just got married, you know. And it's wonderful. You know what? There's nothing like this. When God puts it together, there's nothing like it, you know. There's nothing like it. And as far as program goes, You know, it's so awesome. I got to tell you one thing. I'm going to brag. He says I'm a really good cook. You know what? I never got one compliment at all, not one, in 20 years before. He tells me, like, daily, that is so good. It makes me want to cook. I mean, are you just saying that because you want me to cook? Is that what it is?
You're a good cook and you cook a lot.
Because, yeah, you know what happens when we go out to restaurants and you order vegetables, how much do you get? That, right? Okay, so we weigh, you know, we can do the Mondo, you know, vegetables. It's like, whoa. But he likes my meals, and I appreciate that a lot, you know. But we are together. We are so together when we go places, you know, and we're not sure about something. We're both there as a team. And I know not everybody has that, but I'm going to brag a little bit and say that there is hope in that, you know, that God can put people together. And boy, what a way to go in program, whatever program you're in, you know, to be able to have that great support. And I'm so, so thankful for that. And so don't give up on that part. Boy, don't give up, you know. And friends, too. You know what? If you don't have somebody, we have each other, too. And that's family. You know, that's big-time family that we can, you know, call somebody on the phone, you know. And you know what's so great about this is we don't even have to know that person on the other end. We just have to make that phone call. And you know what? I've made some really great friends that I've never seen before just being on the phone, you know. So talk about family affair. This is right in this room right now. This is what's called a family affair, in my opinion, you know. And how great is that, that we have that. You know, it doesn't have to be all blood because sometimes, you know, this family is a whole lot closer and a whole lot more healing and recovery. So we can call each other up. I call some of my friends, hey, sister, right, you know. And so it doesn't all have to be about blood, that's for sure. And just hug each other. That's a nice thing, too. I think I've gotten more hugs in program, you know. And I guess that's what I wanted to focus on more than anything. When I think of my family and my illness and all that, this is where my true family is together, in recovery together. So that's what I want to share. And I'm not going to tell any secrets or anything like that. Okay. All right, here, Lolita.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lola, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lola.
And I wanted to just let you know that I'm passing out a picture, and this is a family program, and it's definitely a family disease, so I wanted to share. In the picture, it's my sister and I, my older sister, and then my other sister, Elvi, who's not here today, and my mother and my brother. And I also want to know, just out of respect for my sister, because she, not only is she older, but I have a lot of admiration, and she's just been a real inspiration to me. And we did speak about what's off limits, what do you want me to not say? And she says, you know, I don't really care. I said, you know what, I don't either. What I share in my meetings is what I share with you. And we're really open and honest. If there's one touchy subject, we said, well, if people want to hear it, if God will show us the way. just some ugly past stuff, right? That, you know, we share more with our sponsors than we do out in conferences. This couple is family. I remember someone very close here, which I call sister, also had given me some tickets to go see the fireworks, 4th of July, and I remember looking frantic for someone to go with me because everybody was booked 4th of July. And I remember this couple here is like, well, Lola, you can come with us. Just get in the car and go with us. I'll stop by and pick you up. I thought, well, you know, nowhere on earth does that happen. My family is not just my blood family, like I say. You are all of my family, and I've spent hours and hours talking to many of you here, and I've spent time on the phone, time in conventions, time at retreats, time at fashion shows. Just where I spend most of my time is with family in recovery. I wanted to also talk about the book, the chapter in the big book, which talked about family afterwards. And I remember early on in program when I said, my gosh, how am I going to take this back? When you're ready, you're ready. It was a week before my birthday. It was in February when I decided that it was time to get this problem dealt with. Just I want to take care of it. And my birthday was the following week in March. And my mother always, like many Latino families, they just want to, you know, cook. They have special food for every special occasion you can think of. And so my mother always, of course, prepared something special, and she was heartbroken when I went home and said, "Mom, I can't have that." And she looked at me with such sadness, and like, she didn't understand that I was not depriving. I was choosing life. I said, "Mom, I want to live. I want to have a healthy life. I want to live a better life. I can't have that because, yes, part of it is just I can't, but another is I choose this. It is, that's the difference to me between a diet and program. I choose health. I'm not restricting or depriving, or I'm not a victim. I don't feel that at all. To me, it's the more I weigh and measure, the more free I have, the more just freedom I get." So I wanted to pitch gratitude for all of the things that have happened throughout the 4 years in recovery. You know, as far as going back through the changes that have happened, not just with me, but it's happened in my family. Who says you can't sponsor a sibling in fourth step? You know, if anything, it's gotten us closer. My mother has changed towards me, towards herself, towards others, and it's just been a miracle in itself. I remember I wanted to say what it is about gratitude that I'm so thankful for this program is. My mother used to get shots in her eyes because of the diabetes had advanced so much. And I remember coming home and she was wearing sunglasses. My mom's not the type to wear sunglasses, let alone jeans and sunglasses, right? And she had her eyes bloodshot, and I wanted to cry. I don't see them often. I'm the only one who lives further away. I'm in the LA area, and all of my siblings live in Imperial County, which I want to congratulate the group that for just sticking together, and they had their meeting in Hopeville. It was the third year anniversary. And we celebrated with the workshop, and my godmother, which I call, because in Spanish, our sponsor, in Spanish, we're calling them godmother or godfather. They call them a madrina. And so my godmother went with me, and it was, like, perfect because it's my family, it's my godmother, and it was just a wonderful experience. It was hot. It was hot. And then that group conscious said, "No more July anniversaries. We'll celebrate our anniversary, in the winter." I said, "Thank you." So I'll tell you a little bit of my family background, just because I know Nacho's also going to talk about it since we share the same. I am not only recovering from compulsive eating, I'm recovering from anorexia, and I'm recovering from bulimia. And I got to say, I'll never forget the day that I was caught with the heavy into my addiction, and my sister was one of the angels that God put in place. I don't know if she ever realized that, but she explained it. As a nurse, she was ready to become a nurse, and she explained it to my parents a little bit better than I would have, because as a teenager, as it is, I clammed up, I was embarrassed, I didn't want to talk, I just kept looking down, and I was full of shame. My secret was out, and my parents just did not understand what it was that I was doing and why I was doing it. And I come from an alcoholic background. My family's, you know, just a long lineage of alcoholism. And, you know, and many of our family members attend other 12-step programs to help with that direction, which I have not felt as much of an impact. And it's one of two things. One, I haven't hit bottom in that sense of my life. Or two, I don't remember because I was too young. I'm one of the youngest of nine siblings. So I don't feel that much of an impact yet. I have continued to patterns, obviously, have led to addictive relationship after addictive relationship. And so that's something that I've learned to address in this program as well, with the help of, you know, many of you have been very inspirational in that sense. But anyway, Nacha, I'll just go back to my story. Nacha was the one who explained to my family what it is I had and what it was, this bulimia. And if it wasn't for that, I think today I would not be alive. I know I wouldn't have been alive because they scared me. They told me that if I continued to do that, that I would eventually die and very soon. And it was only that after I had let the doctor put tubes in my mouth and sucked out my stomach, and they pumped me out, and they wanted to know what I had drank, if I had drank poison or what's wrong with me. And they realized I had nothing in my stomach, and it had been at the end of the evening. It's like, okay, wait a second. She was having dinner, and there's nothing there. And they realized that there was a problem. So the doctor, you know, he looked at me and said, "What's really the problem?" And he knew. He just knew. I'm sure he wasn't the only kid that would walk in there with that. And just to be kind of graphic, but I was vomiting blood, and that's how they knew. And I was shaking. I was cold. I was scared. I was more afraid, and I was more embarrassed than anything else that I was feeling. But that led on to some footsteps above, you know, on the ladder, saying, okay, now it's time to go get some therapy. And I remember the therapist saying, well, you know, your parents need therapy too. I'm like, yeah, I know that. You could have asked me that sooner. But she also said, you know, there's, she would ask other questions that had nothing to do with me, and I didn't understand that. Like, why are you asking about them? They're not here. They don't want to be here. I'm the one that's here. You have to talk about me and my boyfriend and stuff. You're a typical teenager. I wasn't interested in all the deep stuff. Now, I really appreciate what that woman did for me. She was another one of the angels. She just kept coming. I didn't know that I had a food addiction, and we talked about this. Like, how come there's some therapists who don't tend to lean on, you know, the 12th step and what it is they believe, and just this medical issue that's going on. But we never discussed my addiction, yet I was there because of my bulimia. But we never talked about it. It was very strange. It wasn't until after I married that I discovered that, you know what, willpower can only get me so far. I had been many, many, many years of excessive exercising. I would wake up in the middle of the night to go to the gym. That was my way of coping with sadness and loneliness. I would go in the morning, again, go to work. I would weigh and measure my food to take to work because my trainer had already put me on that. I knew that. It wasn't a big deal to me when I started weighing and measuring here. And I would take all of my food with me to work. I did that, to me that's called white-knuckling it. You know, I white-knuckled it for a good 2 years. But there's something in me that is not the same for the dieter. The dieter could do this all their life and be fine and content and fine, and they don't feel deprived. For someone who's a food addict, had to come to the terms saying, you can't have any of that, because if you have that, you can't stop. And eventually, it gets worse. And what worked for you a year ago or 2 years ago won't work for you today. And that means things change, and life changes, and life happens. So when I had to cope, and I didn't have that ability to know what it is that was really wrong with me and how come my husband needed to get fixed and not me, and there was nothing wrong with me, you know, it was his problem. And I went back to therapy, said, okay, I'm not really feeling good about this, I have this. The therapist at the time, you know, was a marriage counselor, and he said, okay, it's a marriage counselor, but I'm the only one going, right? Something's wrong with that? That's an ongoing issue that I've 10 steps with my sponsor as well. We spoke about what was wrong with me. Again, going back to the same thing, like, I don't know what's wrong. I loved my job. I loved where I live. I love my husband. I have a great relationship with my stepdaughter. I had all these things that are supposed to be perfect. They're supposed to be good. They're supposed to be all, like, I have no reason to be complaining. But yet, I didn't feel like I was complete and whole. Well, there was two very big things that the therapist could not tell me or talk to me about because maybe they either didn't know about it or I omitted it. I don't know what it was. Number one, I resisted on having a higher power and surrendering. That was number one. And number two, again, I didn't know I was a food addict. So those two things were addressed here that could not have been addressed in any place where I've been to before. And since it wasn't working, I still felt horrible. He said I was his life coach. He wasn't even my therapist. I said, okay, well then I'm going to do something else because I'm paying you a lot of money to sit here to get therapy and it's not working. I had heard about it, about this program from someone in the mall, just random, another angel. And she told me about this group called OA that meets so-and-so place. And I said, okay, well, I'll give it a try. I went there. And soon enough, I was just on my way to see how. It didn't work out at OA for me. I went to see how, and then I stopped going to therapy, and then I realized that the problem wasn't my husband, it was me. And then when that transformation came, I think that's when it happened. I went home, and I saw my family, and it really hit reality, and I was able to carry that to my family. And from then on, it's just been one of those things where I've gotten closer and closer to my family members. My sisters and I are very close. My brother is very close to me. I used to never call my brother, ever. What could we possibly talk about? We have nothing in common, yet we have everything in common. And we'll be just random. We'll talk once in a while. At one point when I was sponsoring him with inventory, we would talk on, you know, every day and numerous times a day. And that was hard, you know. But I do say you can sponsor your – that's one of the things I want to make sure you guys don't ever, you know, resist on. You can sponsor a man. You can sponsor a woman. You can sponsor a sibling, a mother. There are things, though, that we and I decided from the beginning. There are things that I don't want to hear, and there are things you can't tell me. It just won't. And I did the same thing with my sponsor in inventory. I said, I will take some things. I took them to a religious person, and I read it to that person just because I wanted to be completely honest and open, and I didn't want to just scare them away, and I didn't want to be my sponsor anymore. When it got to the sexuality part, you know, there's some of the things I was like, okay, well, I'll just take it to someone who used to listening to this on a daily basis. You know, they don't scare them. We don't scare them. And so, you know, I didn't want to shock my poor godmother. So that was the boundaries. If we set boundaries, then it just works out. It works out, and that's what we do today. We set boundaries of what can I go and what can I not do? What can I say? I want to be as respectful as possible. I want to show how much I love my family and how much I care. But I also understand that if I'm holding back, I'm cheating you out of knowing that it does happen and there is hope. And if you have a sibling, you have a brother, a sister, a child, that, you know, when it's time, and eventually you will lead by example. That was the one thing that I read about yesterday on the Family Affairs in the Big Book, was that, you know, we take it. We can't force the higher power in anybody. We just, you know, lead by example. Say, okay, I am no longer here to tell you what to do, nor can I pick at your food, nor can I do this. I can't tell you that. You're going to eat what you're going to eat, and you're free to eat what you want. This is just the way it is for me. I still, to the day, take, when I go out to eat, I still take my scale and my measuring cups, and I can't tell other people what they can and cannot do. I just try my best to be helpful as much as I can and be available. And but it's like a double blessing, because not only did I find recovery, I've taken it to my family members, and it's really made all the difference in my life, because it I know what it feels like to have support. I can go home. I go to my mom's. I don't have to take any of my stuff with me. They already know. You know, they know that I'm interrupted at certain times because I need to take my calls, or I need to go, and I'm not trying to be isolated. I'm going to go do my writing or my meditation. I just leave. They just know that. They expect that of me, and I don't offend anybody. Now that they're used to it, it's okay. Before, they didn't understand, why is she on the phone all the time? Why is she leaving outside? And what is this, so many secrets? And they understand, you know what, there's boundaries, and people, you know, there's not some conversations we just have with our sponsors and some conversations we only have with our sponsees. You know, and that's just the way it is. We don't, you know, or there's outreach calls and somebody needs help. You know, I just walk away. If I know now today what I used to do different is this. I used to put myself first, then you, then God. And the order has reversed. It's my higher power, then me, then everyone else. And then it does work. If I do it in that way, it works. If I don't, then I'll just go back to what I was doing, and that didn't work, obviously, and I'm not going to try experimenting on it. So am I out of time? Oh, okay, so I'm going to go. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes, and so I'm going to go ahead and pass on the phone to Nachita.
Thank you, Lola. Hi, Nacha, compulsive overeater. It is really great to be here today. Thanks to Lola. She was the one that paid for the commission, because I was not in my best financial place at this time. And so thank you, Lola, for doing that. It's a gift. It's I have grown so much in this last 24 hours has been tremendous amount of growth. And so for that, I'm very grateful to my higher power. Lola's already told you a lot as far as our upbringing. Yeah, she was very little, so she didn't get to see a lot of things. I was... the one that was the little perfect little girl, the one that wanted to do things right, the helper at the house, the one that did everything right because anyone upset her mom. Because I could see my mom getting upset at my older sister because she was the little rebel, and so I didn't want to get in trouble. Even though I wanted to do those things that little girls did, or, you know, go out, you know, just to a dance, you know, as a typical teenager, I never did that, you know, without her consent, because I wanted to be girl, a little girl, a perfect little girl, and she put me as an example. Why can't you be like Nacha? Why can't you do things like Nacha? Go to school like Nacha did. Okay. I didn't realize how much that was affecting me. I kept on that pattern, not being my true self. Growing up in an alcoholic home, I got to see not very wonderful things, of course. You know, as many of us understand, I'm in a different 12-person program, which I'm in Al-Anon. I got to do that program way much earlier than this program. So, I, of course, you know, I married an alcoholic, he is okay with me saying this because we have an agreement on that. He is in his program. He's in AA, and together we're going to be sober for almost 10 years, you know, with the grace of God. But anyways, thank you. When I get married, we were just talking about that. You know, my dad was like, "You sure you want to marry this man?" He saw, obviously he saw something on him, you know. And I said, "Yes, I wanted to save him. You know, he was a sick man. I can take care of this man, you know. And I'm still taking care of him." We've been married for almost 17 years. He is my best friend, but he's a very, very sick man. I need him. He needs me, but not in a codependent way. We need to walk together this walk, okay? He's also a CAO member. It's in English and Spanish. He tends to kind of, you know, leave the program once in a while, comes back, you know. I'm always here for him, you know. That's all I can say. But anyways, I want to retract a little bit. As I was growing up in Mexico, we immigrated, and I was 11 years old. I perfectly remember when I became an overeater because it was a whole new country for me. I was not used to being in a school, first of all, where they take showers. You know, I'm going to get nude in front of these people? What are you talking about? Things like that. It had such tremendous amount of trauma to me that I didn't realize how bad it was, self-esteem. And I remember the teacher saying, "So are you like a man or what? How come you don't want to get undressed?" And I was, oh, my God, devastated. So, of course, as the years go by, I ended up in therapy. It was so funny because the first therapist that I had, it was in Mexicali. And I remember the psychologist, obviously she picked up that I was overweight because one of the sessions, as I'm talking to her, which was never good, by the way, was not the best therapist that I ever had. We never got to really dig into the stuff that was going on inside me, you know, and not until I did my inventory with my sister here that I got to really get into the core of the things and really dig in there, and that's when it hurt. But that's where the healing began. And so when at the end of that session, I was already a nurse. I was already working, very independent. And then she goes, "Okay, Nachita, see you next week. By the way, lose some weight." And I was, "What did she mean by that?" And I go, "That was." I asked my husband, soon to be my husband, my boyfriend, then, "Do you think I'm fat?" "No, you're not fat. Of course not, because we were both stuff ourselves. You know, we were both drink and party and stuff." And so I never realized I was having a problem. She picked it up, but she didn't ever went into detail. She never went into depth as to, you know, what is wrong. You know, what did she see in me? You know, but that was years and years and years ago. I don't know if I got to know about the program before Lola did. Being married to my husband, it's a whole. There's a lot of alcoholics in both sides of the family. Okay, let's just put it this way. So they knew about this program about 12 years ago, and by then, of course, I'm having all these issues, self-esteem. Instead of coming up and working them, I'm being angry and I'm being jealous and I'm just being a little witch. And I'm going to show you that I can do this, but with me, not with my higher power, just me, because I know I can do this, right? And I remember them talking about it and saying, "Nacho, won't you come in and join us, come to a meeting, da-da-da." And I said, "You're going to teach me how to eat? Nobody tells me how to eat. I can do this on my own." I mean, I had a self-esteem, but yet my ego was so high, but I didn't know how to direct it in a positive way. See what I'm saying? And so, of course, I never did, but I cut I went into a diet and lost 30 pounds for a wedding. And everybody was like, "You look so wonderful. Yeah, I guess you also joined the program." No, I did this on my own. And I was so proud to tell them I did this on my own. Of course, I went back and started getting the weight again. So it was not until things, you know, didn't get any better than my husband, when we both realized that he had a problem with alcohol, that right away I go to my priest, and he's a wonderful, wonderful pastor. And so he knew us very, very well because we were very active in church. And So he goes, so what do you want to do now? I said, I want out. This moment, I want out. I will not tolerate abuse of any kind. And he said, do you know that it's a disease? And I said, yes. So I still went out. He goes, right now you are talking out of disappointment and angry, and a lot of things are going on right now. You need to pray, Nacho. You need to get on your knees, pray together, pray alone, get in touch with God. He cares for you. He loves you. And I'll be praying for you too. Leave it alone. Come back in next week, and then we'll talk about this again. By then, my husband and I, it was about 5 days. We didn't talk a word to each other, which is so, so, so hard. And all of a sudden, you know, I know God was there because we started talking one day after work, and we talked like if we never talked before. We talked up until about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I said, I love you, but I will not stay. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not telling you that I'm going to leave or for you to leave the house. I don't know yet, except that I'm going to go and meet the Father again on Friday, and you're welcome to come, because he said it was okay if you wanted to join us. And he said, yes. By then, it was God, I know, through prayer, that I was calm the day that we met. We patched things up. Within 2 days, he was going to his AA meetings. Within 2 weeks, I was starting my Al-Anon meetings. I clicked in that place like that. I knew that I needed to be there. I've been there since then. It's almost 10 years. So I was used to working a little bit on the program, on the steps. So when I see Lola and I start, I don't think I ever told you this, but when I see Lola losing weight again for the number, it was something so common, you know, all of us, you know, up and down, up and down. So it was like another, okay. And I remember thinking to myself, I don't think I ever told you, oh, she's doing it again. Okay, maybe I'll get into a diet too, you know, for whatever event that is coming up. And so how did it happen? How did I get in here? I don't know. You did? I don't know, but I don't remember what. Yeah, I came up. It was for 4th of July, and what I know for a fact is that there was something different about her. Not I had seen her skinny before. I had seen her in her heavy biggest weight, but it was there's something. There was I remember her that little gleam in her eyes that I never seen before. That serenity. Oh my gosh, she could not stop talking about God. And, like, I was the one that was talking about it because I was active in church and she was not. No, something had changed, and I wanted that. I said, well, I've been active in church, but I don't see that connection. I don't see myself, or I don't feel that I talk about God the same way that she does. I want to have what she's got. So I remember coming up, and I said, can I buy your program? She goes, well, no, there's going to be a meeting. And I mean, she's just like that, seriously. And I'm like, no, but I'm on vacation. I don't want to go to a meeting. I want to have some fun. Like, let's just go to a meeting. And I said, well, okay, let's go Spanish because Spanish is my primary language. And she goes, okay, we'll go. And it was July the 3rd. And it was about 6 or 7 in the evening or so. It was wonderful. I feel welcome. Just like the convention, oh, you're Nacha, you're Lola's sister. You know, like, okay. That's how I felt in that meeting. And I think that is so important that we need to remember about when we have newcomers, they need to feel welcome, regardless of who they are, because we all have a package. That's what we're there. We have so much crap within ourselves that we need to know that there's someone out there that has the same story, the same feelings, that they understand what we're going through. And so I remember the first meeting, I said, I'm staying, and I have stayed, thank God. I'm going to be almost 4 years abstinence, and she was my first sponsor. I didn't think twice about asking for her help anymore. I humbled, you know, and I said, I will answer the questions. The first 30 questions, I was like, oh, that's too many of them. Do I have to answer all of them? And then there's more I never knew about the inventory. Oh, my gosh. And so I went and I said, okay, well, you know what? She did it. I can do it too. It's got to be something good for me, right? Otherwise, she wouldn't be asking me to do it. And I, you know, she was very honest in the beginning. She was, you're going to do work, I'm here. But if you're not, I'm not. Because I can be with someone else who's willing to do the work. Okay. So I have a lot of respect for her, a lot of admiration. I said, I will do it. The inventory was the most wonderful thing that I have ever done. I love writing. I love reading. But I got to love writing because of that. I got to dig in there, got to get all the junk out. And who better than her, because she had seen it. She had lived there. So I couldn't picture it any different, because I couldn't lie, in other words. I could not say something that it wasn't true. We grew together even more closer. To the point that you know, we're just the sisters. We're very, very close friends. I'll call her, you know, if I have something going on, I'll call her, and she's busy, she will call me back. That's the kind of relationship that I have with my other sister, also the one that is in the program as well. It's wonderful. I never would have thought about telling her all the things that were said in the inventory, but I will do it again. If I have to, I will do it again, because I held it back for 40 years, growing up in an alcoholic home where there's all type of abuse, and wanted to cover that in a pretty way, doing a lot of denial instead of facing the truth, and finally coming out and saying it. It's just the most freedom of feeling that I can ever experience. So the inventory was it didn't open my eyes, it opened my heart. And because of that, I was able to open the heart to someone else as well. And that's about it.
We could take some questions if anybody, is this on? One, it is, okay. I guess they don't want to hear us next door. But comments, questions, yes. Now, one thing we're going to do, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'm going to repeat the question because this is all being recorded, and of course they can't hear in the back, so go ahead. Okay, if I have this wrong, let me know. But I think the question is, how do you, if you have a sibling that wants you to sponsor them, and yet the relationship you have with them is such that you get triggered by them and just either emotionally or for whatever reason don't feel comfortable dealing with them, so what do you do in that particular situation? They really want your help. Is that pretty much correct? Okay. Anybody want to tackle that?
Hi everyone, I'm Lola, compulsive overeater. And we just talked about this. We said boundaries. You said boundaries and to disconnect the person from the disease. That the person's not toxic, it's what comes out of the mouth may be toxic. And we learn in recovery about people, places, and things. Some of the sickest people we know are ourselves and the people that live with us, because they put up with us. So I'm very grateful that my husband hasn't kicked me out of my house. And one of the things is, getting back to answering your question, is yes, boundaries. And I think that we lose out the opportunity to give someone that we love so much an opportunity to get even closer to us when we say no. I think that it's worth a try. It's always worth a try, and you never know, because it's not me sponsoring, it's God using me. So it's really God sponsoring that person through me. And if I deny that opportunity to do that or be of that service, especially to someone I love, I'm really cheating myself, because sponsoring is not so much about the other, it's about myself. And I grow from it, and God, you know, knows it's been, I've done it for a couple of my siblings. And yes, sometimes what they say or what I've said have been toxic, but I know that I'm not toxic and they're not toxic. We're people with an illness. And if I disconnect what is coming from the disease and what is coming from a person, with an illness, it's more of a compassion. And as long as we set healthy boundaries, I think it works with anyone. It works with the with the boss. It works with people in the grocery store, and it definitely works with people we love in the family.
Not a compulsive overeater. I would question myself as to what's the reason I don't want to do it. See what I'm saying? And just being honest with myself and really pray and talk to my higher power and write about it and read about it. And if I still don't feel that I want to do this, and I find the reasons for it and the thing is logical, we can always, you know, have someone else, a sponsor. Because every family is different. Even though we're in the same my friend tells me about the same movie, but it's different characters, it's still different within the family. We're so different, but then we have so many similarities as well. It's look into that.
And this is April, compulsive overeater. You know, listening to that too, I liked what Lola, you were saying in sharing. And maybe there's things that your sister is not willing to, certain things she's not willing to share with you, that maybe there is someone else, a priest or whomever that might be, that she's able to get those deep questions that she would not be able to share with you too. I like that there's always another person. It doesn't always have to be that one. So.
This is Rick, compulsive eater. I just want to touch on that for a second myself. As I told you, when I first got in the program, my kids both started following the food plan, and my daughter wanted me to sponsor her, and I said, no, I don't want to do that. Now, after this conversation, because she still kicks it around, I may go back to her and offer to do that again if she does program the way it's written, and I don't want to hear her inventory. You know what I mean? That's where I draw the line, right there. Anyway, anybody else have any other questions or comments? Yes. Yeah, the question is, again, if I have this wrong, let me know, but how do you, as a parent, how do you fight the urge to control your kids' eating, especially if you see them putting on weight, and like April shared, her mom is freaking out because she's, how old were you when your mom's first on diet pills? You know, 12, mom's freaking out because out of the goodness, you know, of our hearts as parents, we really don't want our kids to go through what we go through. But, you know, how do you get that across and yet be, you know, help them? And I'll tell you, my own experience has been, I've had my kids bite my head off a couple times, rightly so, where I crossed the line, and they let me know I crossed the line. I kind of look at it even with sponsees, you know, I can't make anybody do anything. I can't work their program for them. I can give them ideas and suggestions, but with my kids in particular, it's such a touchy thing, you know, especially if you have a teenager and they don't want any parent telling them what to do. You know, they're going through that normal process of disconnecting, and they need to do that. You know, they need to make some distance so they can learn how to deal with life on their own. It's very rough. I don't really have an answer to that. I can just tell you my experience was more about what I did and not very much about what I'd say.
I'd like to comment on that on two levels. I'll let you talk about our baby brother, and I will talk about my stepdaughter. When I met my stepdaughter, she was 11, and I was heavily into the food and alcohol. So our bonding time was, let's go get our nails done, and then we'll go pick up some stuff. And she knew what stuff for me was. And we would share into my addiction heavily. And she thought it was so funny that one time I ate so much that it just came out by itself. One particular binge food. I didn't mean that to happen. It just happened. And she was laughing hysterically. And the reason why we had shoved it down our throat so quickly was because we were going to go back where my husband was and his healthy family that eat normal. And we didn't want them to see they're all like, none of them ever had a weight issue in their life till the day. I'm like, let's just eat it. And then let's hurry back. And so she's like, I can't. I'll finish it. So I we went back very happy and obviously, you know, perky and yee-hoo. And but now she knows today. She's seen me the process of it, recovery, and she knows. She's a little older, though, obviously. And I don't know how little, but I do have a little brother. But she has been, oh, my gosh, my stepdaughter's hilarious. I love her to death. And she knows that first comes program, then comes other stuff. So she knows that she's going to go with me. She's going to eat the way I cook, what I do. She's obviously welcome to eat anything else, but I'm not going to participate. And I've told my husband, when my stepdaughter comes over, her first trip is always to the grocery store because there's nothing in my house that she can eat. And I refuse to put it in there. I just won't, even though it's okay and moderate for other people, but I don't participate in other people's addictions. If I think they have a possibility of becoming an addict, I don't bother with it. You know what? It's like, I just won't. We don't keep anything like that in the house. So my husband is very healthy. He's a health nut. And to him, it makes no difference whether there's flour or sugar in the house. He doesn't have it anyway. So for her, first stop is, let's go get some real food. So from then on, I said, I will no longer take her. If you want to go and buy it for her, you take her. But she can welcome to eat what I have here. But otherwise, I won't. That's how I don't think I'm controlling. I'm just watching out for me. And I'm not participating in their addiction. As far as a healthy balance for a child, that's different. It'll come with time. It's hard to tell when if they or not have developed the allergy or not. But I'm not gonna shy them away from anything if I know that yes, so there is a probability of it. However, it's gonna be where they're old enough to decide whether or not they themselves can call themselves whatever it is. If God forbid, but if they have an addiction, well, you know, we just start taking them. I was thinking about the other 12-step program is, wouldn't it be nice to have a CEHA-anon? CEHA-anon, because that would just completely answer all of the questions that we have, because it's lacking, I believe, in this program, that we don't have somewhere we can bring our children to and say, some meetings actually have brought out said, why do you bring children? Because it's just sometimes for the other people it's disruptive. For me it's never been a problem. I'm way okay with bringing my baby brother places and stuff, but for some people it bothers them. So that is why it's important to maybe think about somewhere, somehow, you know, God direct us in CEHA-anon where children can go. And there's a lot of touchy subjects about that, about, you know, liabilities and whether a child can do a food plan or not. And that's why. But if an adult accompanies them, there is no problem. As long as if they're 18 and over, they can come on their own. And if they're under 18, they have to bring a parent or a legal guardian, correct? And if you want to.
Yeah. What, not a compulsive overeater. Well, I just wanted to just going to extend a little bit what you said. I work with children every day, and so as you know, there's a more epidemic about obesity the whole country, and so every day we are doing referrals out to the dietitian, to the pediatrician, because of this child is, you know, is morbid obese, or there's the family history, Latinos, that kind of thing. And so talking to the parent, and you know, there's this little child, 6, 7, teenager or whatever, and I am asking the parent, do you know why, you know, this, you know, you were, you know, your child was referred? Sure. And I'm seeing the mom, obviously, obese, overweight, and I said, okay, well, what are you feeding, you know, what are you feeding the child? If it's not a teenager, you have no... They have very, very control. The only thing I can tell, I tell the parents is that you have control as far as what comes into the house when you go to a grocery store. You have control, especially the little. They're not going to go. You're not going to send a 3-year-old to the store to get groceries. You are going to bring that food. When they're teenagers, it's. Let's just hope that you give me enough sense as far as teaching them healthy habits, that they're going to grow to eat in a healthy way. But in the meantime, when they're young and they're coming in with, you know, lollipops and what have you, and I ask them, well, what did you feed in this morning? Well, you know, we stopped at McDonald's, you know, because we're in a hurry. Well, I didn't have time, so, you know, just give them shots because we're going to go to McDonald's. You know, that's the reward. You know, after they get shots, they're going to go for ice cream or whatever. So we have control, I think, as adults. As adults, we have control as to what comes into the house and what doesn't as teenagers. Again, you know, we just pray that they have enough, you know, that we show them enough the good kind of healthy foods so they can grow and have those so they can do and follow those healthy habits, you know, that we instruct in them. You were talking about my little brother that he wastes his food. Of course, you know, children are gonna do what they see, not what we say, but, you know, but they're gonna do by example, in other words. And so he's only 2 years old. If you notice, my mom is not a young chick anymore. She'll be 70. she's a spring chicken to us, though. But of course, she's not happy. She adopted my little brother just a few months ago. It's wonderful to have him because he is growing. He's the one that is growing the most. We were talking about that—the most healthy environment there can be, because there's no alcohol in the house anymore. There's always healthy food in the house. We don't scream it or yell at each other in the house. There's no abuse, because if I'm going to raise my voice, I need to remove myself in that moment and deal with that anger, deal with those issues, and then come and talk to whoever I need to talk to. So he's not seeing that. So, again, it's by example. I didn't know you were just talking about that. You saw him, you know, weighing his food. I didn't know that. But he loves salads. He loves salads. And he'll go and he'll ask for a salad.
Yeah. He's the only kid I know that doesn't do that at the fast food place. Anyway, I wanted to... Are we out of time? No? Oh, I just want to add that I believe it's healthy if you can, if the child is not disruptive and is big enough to take them to one, see how many long as the group conscious allows it, and just to expose them to what is good and what we do, and that it's just a seed. From then, we're not responsible for what happens, but we planted a seed, and that's what I've done with my stepdaughter. She's always welcome to come. She's helped me in many events because I've asked her for help. When we sold flowers, she made sure she had she helped me out. But I've taken her to meetings, and that's not whatever happens next. It's not me. It's God.
You know, when we were talking about that, it just reminded me of my oldest daughter, who's 28 right now. I have three, but you know, your firstborn, and it was like, okay, as a child, you know, when I was pregnant, I never ate better in my whole life. You know, matter of fact, the day I found out I was pregnant, I quit smoking, bam, like that, cold turkey. But you know what? I was so afraid that I was going to do something wrong with this baby. And so, you know what? I ate so good. And then when she was born, we never had any sugar in none of that cereal with the junk in it. You know what I mean? It was all healthy because I had to do it the right way. And you know, the funny thing is, she's 28 now, and even as a, you know, in elementary and all that, I never had given her all that junk. 28 years old, here she is, guess what? She hates all that stuff. She doesn't like it. And I'm thinking, you know, my second one, I had an IV drip of Haagen-Dazs, but anyway, you know, but it's just, it's amazing when you really, now I'm thinking and wondering, is that something that in her system that she did not develop that craving, you know, from having all that. So there's another thing too, just anybody with little kids is to start off. Yes, yes, she is a compulsive eater of some sort. Yeah, not to an extreme like her mom, but so there's the ingrained genetic part of it too. And then my second one is a skin mole, works out every day, you know. And she had the IV drip, so I don't know, that whole thing. So anyway.
Yeah, any other questions, comments? Yes. 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 No, they really did do that on their own. This is true. I had trouble with them rebelling with other things, but not with that, you know. Yeah, my son went more towards the alcohol side of things, and he kind of went down that road and got arrested at a very young age, and that was a whole other issue. So, you know, if that addiction gene runs in the family, it's probably going to show up one way or the other. Well, thank you. Any other? Yes, Jerry.
This was a comment from somebody in the audience saying they really wouldn't recommend sponsoring a husband, but they have that relationship where they can do that.
Yeah, we're all really hot in here. We want to thank Nacha, Lola, Rick, and April for sharing today. And I hope you can able to take something back to, you know, and help your family. If you know you have something there, let's hope it can work out. We know this program works, and we just want to keep passing the message along. So, yeah, the people that did speak or did have a question that wasn't on there, if you just sign the piece of paper, just as far as any legality has to take place, we just want to have you just sign the piece of paper, that's it. So we want to thank you, and there'll be some more serenity prayer. So why don't we just all, we can circle the wagon, sure. All right, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, it works if you work it, and it won't if you don't, so do it. All right.